This is WHFR Dearborn. Coming up now, our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and views featuring stories about Dearborn and the surrounding area. I'm your host, Jay Koronick, and I'm here with co-host Ned Apigian today. Welcome, Ned.
Thank you for having me again.
It's always great. I think you were here 2 weeks ago and giving us your insights about different events. Let me find out what microphone you're on.
Yeah, time flies by.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially the older you get.
Well, you've been busy here today, in fact. One of our top stories for this week is the continuing story following the petition drive that was begun to recall Representative Andy Dillon. And
who is Speaker of the House?
Right,
as well.
The majority Speaker of the House of Representatives here in Michigan, in Lansing. Here's the story, which I'll briefly just summarize. It's in the Times Herald from this last Wednesday, March 26, as told by J. Patrick Pepper. And then Ned was actually in attendance at an event, a benefit supporting Representative Dillon this morning. He's going to give us his insights on that and describe what happened. But the story is from Wednesday. The campaign to recall House Speaker Andy Dillon, Democrat Redford Township, is intensifying as the May 1 petition deadline approaches. To get on the ballot for the August primary, they have to get so many signatures together and have them filed and authorized by May 1st. So that's about 6 weeks away.
8,724, I recall.
That's right, 8,724 signatures to put this issue. Maybe that applies to any issue, too, or at least in this case it's a recall.
It's hard to say. It may have something to do with the number of votes cast in the previous election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes that's true.
Complicated formulas
right.
Like that.
And I think maybe there's a different number or percentage required for different kinds of ballot petitions, too, that a recall is a certain amount, and maybe an issue that's supposed to go on the ballot might demand another amount.
So probably if you wanted to recall the federal senator, it would take several hundred thousand votes.
Well, that's very possible,
too. A state senator might be several thousand more votes than 8,000.
Mm-hmm. The background here is that the recall effort was launched in response to the $1.4 billion tax increase approved by state legislators last November. Wayne County Taxpayers Association President Rose Bogart, a Dearborn Heights resident, called the increase a, quote, slap to the face, unquote, to taxpayers in light of the state's troubled economy. She also said that Dillon, who represents Redford, North Dearborn Heights, and part of Livonia, should be held accountable for his part in the budget jump. Now, we've covered that for the last several weeks, and last week, 2 weeks ago, we had letters to the editor who were in disagreement with Rose Bogart's position and this petition drive. Last week, we read a letter from Rose herself that was a letter to the editor in the papers where she criticized her criticizers. Okay? But now there is, of course, that deadline coming up, and Representative Dillon apparently is extremely concerned about this. So, Ned, why don't you take the rest of this here? Tell us about the fundraising event for Representative Andy Dillon that happened just this morning. And again, folks, this is the show for those that are listening as a podcast or later in the week from our website, whfr.fm. This is Friday, March the 28th, where we're doing this show live.
Yes. Interestingly enough, this gathering that he had today really has really nothing to do with the recall. He, like most other politicians, have annual fundraisers, and this happens to be the week that they had picked for their annual fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And he did speak of this issue, which was important. And the most interesting thing about this fundraiser, and I attend many fundraisers. In fact, last night I was at Congressman Dingell's fundraiser in Ypsilanti, and I would say there were a couple hundred people there in a very small room. Today's fundraiser for him was, when I went there, I couldn't believe the parking lot. I thought it was a wedding at early in the morning, 8 to 10. And they had tables, as many as 60-plus tables set at 10. That means 500 to 600 people.
A representative to Michigan legislature. Of course, he is the majority leader, so he does have a lot of power.
Yeah, on top of that, this is his district, which we are broadcasting in Dearborn Heights, is his area, Redford, which we're talking about. So that was a little stupefying to me, to tell you the truth.
Well, you had mentioned, and this is true, too, of many fundraisers, folks, it takes money to advertise on television, and in the all the mailings cost a lot of money to send them around. Ned knows, because he campaigned to be on the Dearborn Heights Congress
Council,
and it's very expensive. But that's along with a few cable TV ads. The direct mailings are the way that local candidates would get on the council typically.
Well, this fundraiser was kind of expensive. It was $300 a person,
wow.
So you can imagine that at roughly 500 people times $300, what's the math of that? It's not $15,000, it's $150,000.
Yeah, for $300 a person, forget about my joke about what kind of meal you get for that, but can't you get into seeing the President of the United States? Don't the presidential banquets and fundraisers go for about $300 or maybe even less?
I've done that, too, and I'd like to tell you how that goes. The average person would find it interesting.
Yeah.
But we'd have to do the math.
Well, but Representative Dillon, let's just stay with him here.
Yeah.
There was a fundraiser for him. Did he make any direct comments about this?
Yes, he did.
What did he say?
He indicated, of course, before he came on the floor, he was praised by the floor leader of the Michigan House, which was Representative Tabachman, and then there's another woman who was also a state representative that acted as master of ceremonies. I think her name was, I don't want to mispronounce it. She is another rep. I don't want to give her name because I'm going to, not say it correctly. They talked about how good a job he was doing, And he did take some time to say that it is unfortunate because it was distracting. He indicated that this is a distraction that he does not need in order to fulfill his job. And when you think about it that way, and he talked about all the many things that they needed to do, the issues of what are important, and upcoming things, of which he says, now I have to devote time and effort. And he claimed that people were paid as much as $6 for a signature, and they talked about people being harassed one way or another.
Yeah.
We've heard that in the news.
Yeah, well,
it is a distraction. The point I want to make that this is unfortunately a distraction when there's going to be an election 4 months later, and if he's found not appropriate, people will vote him out of office. I like to talk about the issues that are important, which is more important than the fact. But that kind of support that I saw today is what you would have for a person that's running for federal senator. I've been to them. I've never seen a crowd like this.
Well, besides of his power in the legislature, he certainly is he's an attractive gentleman. I see his picture in the paper here. And
young man with five kids.
And yeah, and so he seems an appropriate candidate that could be supported for all kinds of reasons, other than the fact he's a Democrat, too. Some of the negative things.
He's an unusual Democrat. He's an extremely conservative Democrat, which really should make him interesting to the Republicans as well. But
let me show some of the problems behind the scenes that are happening here by continuing with this article. Rose Bogart, who we mentioned before, who's in charge of the petition drive, has accused Dillon's camp of stalking signature collectors,
right,
propagating misinformation and downright harassment. So she's accusing Dylan's
right
supporters, at least, even if he didn't directly assign them, of those things. 2 weeks ago at a CVS pharmacy in Redford, 8 Dylan backers allegedly surrounded one petitioner within 10 minutes of arriving. Unable to collect signatures, the man left. Another time at a Redford post office, Bogart said that she was trying to collect signatures and got confronted by 4 township police officers. All the unwelcome attention has made collecting signatures difficult for the recall organizers. So to get a better idea who their opposition is, they, that is Rose Bogart and the rest of her group, have created a website, which is www.dylansthugs.com.
Yes.
And at that website, there's pictures of anti-recall petition blockers.
Yeah, and they have been posted. Identify who the mm-hmm people were.
And they're offering $250 award to anyone who can identify these people that interfered with what I assume is their legal right to petition on public property, that is like a sidewalk or whatever.
And the counter to that is what Dylan says about what they're doing. They're telling people, do you want to lower your taxes?
Right.
Don't support the recall.
Right. Dylan says that there's been these misleading statements from the people trying to get signatures, trying to simplify the issue, not
absolutely
making it a Dylan issue or his previous actions. But do you want lower taxes? Sign here and continue.
Well,
on
actually, he did say something about that today that's very uh-huh interesting. That's mm not in any of the articles that we see in our local newspapers. Mm-hmm. One of the problems with government, from the point of view of conservatives and liberals, so to speak, conservatives or Republicans in general are trying to starve government. So what he's pointing out today was that the increases that they put back in taxes did not go back to the tax level of the year 2000. They have gone halfway back to the tax levels of 2004. So the previous Republican administration, their song has always been reduce taxes, reduce taxes, mm-hmm, so that government can't provide too many services. And in order to restore some of the liquidity that the state needs, else the state's going to go into bankruptcy, mm-hmm, this is what he talked about today. And people don't right realize how we reduced them and reduced them and reduced them, taking them back. We have the same thing in the federal government. So mm-hmm starving federal government, starving state government, and starving local government is the mechanism to say you need to reduce your taxes.
Mm-hmm. Well,
consequently, you're faced with
this. I think, to speak for the conservatives, if not for Rose Bogart and her group, because I don't know their exact stance on these things, but some of the people that would like to see government made smaller are not trying to starve programs we have, but in fact eliminate some programs.
Exactly.
So it's not a matter of crippling something we're trying to do, but saying this is better done some other way or whatever. And you might say, as a sort of an example, and I can see both sides of this. Okay, there's the mortgage crisis. There's a problem for some banks that gave out those crazy loans, and people are reneging.
Well, the
and
Federal Reserve is helping Bear Stearns now.
Bear Stearns, yes, but in terms of the individual mortgage holders and some of the smaller individual banks, not just Bear Stearns, there's no help right now. Although Hillary and Barack, if I can use their first name, since mm-hmm I almost seem to know them intimately from 16 months of constant coverage on the commercial media. Anyway, they were talking about either a $20 or $30 billion assistance in a variety of ways to especially people that are in this sort of mortgage trouble. Whereas John McCain, the conservative running for Republican nomination, his position is he didn't think government should be involved in trying to save companies that make bad, stupid decisions, or trying to save individuals that make bad, stupid decisions. Of course, I was thinking about this myself this morning. If people don't have the knowledge, then they're going to make maybe regretted decisions. Decisions they're going to be sorry about later. I would think that sort of a middle position is okay. And this is more than a middle position, I guess. If government is going to do something, why don't they guarantee that every person that goes through at least public education is required to take a course on financial business matters, you know, how to make good decisions about credit, how to make good decisions about a variety of banking issues, including taking out mortgages. I saw one of my favorite TV pitchmen, Kevin Trudeau, last night, who has been under federal investigation several times for some of the medical products that he's been hawking in past years. Once he was even acquitted of a felony because of false claims in TV infomercials. I think about Coral Calcium and its benefits and some makeup that takes away wrinkles. But, you know,
I bought one of his books. Yes, but I haven't read it yet.
He had to promise not to sell any products anymore on TV, but he can be a publisher. He can be a book writer. And his latest book is on debt management and how to get out of debt. Of course, you have to pay him $30, mm-hmm. so you got to go $30 more in debt to start with. But I'm thinking, okay, you know, how to take care of credit cards, how to use them responsibly, how to get the best mortgages. Why don't we have that as a required and responsible class in high school for everybody to take? I was ashamed that many years ago I discovered my daughter didn't even know how to open a savings account, didn't know anything about checking accounts or the cost of checking. I had to guide her in this. And in my day, which was a long time ago, nobody required it except poor little Flat Rock High School, which is right south in Wayne County here.
And nobody had a checking account.
They thought, no, they required all students in the ninth grade to take one class, and it was called General Business. And in there, all the basics, savings account, checking accounts, difference between a commercial savings bank and a credit union, mortgage, all things that matter to the average person in terms of money management. I would agree with John McCain in general. The government shouldn't bail people out of these situations, either businesses or people, if they do a bad job of managing, either as business or personal. But they need the education. Otherwise, it's not really their fault, is it, when they get into these problems?
Well, there's a lot of places you can begin if you're interested in the voters. You don't have to base the voting on whether the harvest is coming in the 19th century. Yeah. I mean, elections were so important, you can have them on Sunday. They should be a holiday instead of after work on the Tuesday following the first Monday of the month. We could begin with that kind of ridiculous thinking.
Let me wrap up the story here, which is this is all we have to tell you about House Speaker Representative Andy Dillon.
Actually, he said something else that's very important I didn't know.
Yeah, go
this whole thing started out with recall of 12 people.
Yes, a lot more people. Yes, a lot
and
more names.
And apparently this whole recall attempt is zeroed in on him only, and the other 11 have been dropped. I didn't know that.
Right. For some reason,
he announced that.
Even though some Republicans voted for this tax increase, they only picked 12 Democrats. At least that's my understanding. I could be wrong. Sorry, yeah. Rose, if I am. But they only picked 12, and maybe those were the 12.
Well, now they've changed their mind.
Well, it's very hard to get petitions for 12 people in 12 different districts at the same time, I think, because Gino Polidori from Dearborn here,
that's
voted in favor of two as a Democrat.
He was
He was one of the 12 that were targeted, and so the petition is just sort of symbolic, and they're going after the leader of the Democrats, and of course, it was, but the Senate is under Republican majority, and it did the tax bailout, if you will, for the state
had
of Michigan
to pass the
had
Senate,
to pass the Senate,
Senate
too.
Well.
So a lot of Republicans did agree to go along with this. And if you don't like the package or any individual parts, you
have
to
much choice.
Blame the. Well, I don't know how many other options there were except eliminating major governmental services that some people have come to know and love, and others may think are extras. But, you know, that would shake up a lot of things. Significant change, even if it's for the better, is tough for people to agree to. I mean, what would it be like without that? I can't imagine. Well, we better not try it. And politicians, of course, never want to upset the status quo too much because it's the status quo that got him elected. And so it's too bad because I think government, we do need some significant changes to try some things. And I think, for example, term limits has not worked. We tried that. We got a mess of people that don't have much experience in Congress.
Right.
We do not have any career politicians, and I don't think that's bad if you're good at being a politician, as Mayor Guido was in Dearborn. I think he was very good at it. It came to him naturally. He had a lot of knowledge after 16 years as our mayor, and that benefited him in his position. Of course, he passed away himself, but there were no term limits on his job here, and so there are changes that need to be made, and those aren't happening, I think, because there's not enough experience. So let's proceed on.
Yeah, we ought to give the people a break and do a PSA so they can hear somebody else's voice and a little music.
Oh, well,
I've got
some great
PSAs here. So we don't bore them to death.
Well,
and then we can get on to some other issues.
No,
break it with a song.
Well, if you insist. Here's three different messages we have for you from both Henry Ford Community College at the beginning and from WHFR about exciting things coming up. They're all non-commercial messages, too, folks. So take a listen. We'll be back with more news and views on the new WHFR Journal.
Henry Ford Community College has a lot to offer. A credit transfer guarantee, a job skills guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee. Registration for spring, summer, and fall classes begins Monday, March 31st. Call 1-800-585-HFCC for additional information. Or check the website at hfcc.edu. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
You're ready for an evening of laughs with Project 2 Improv Group. For the benefit of WHFR Radio, Saturday, April 12th at the Ramada Inn in Taylor on Eureka, just east of I-75. Doors open at 7:30 and the show starts at 8 p.m. Tickets are just $12 and the proceeds go to support commercial-free public radio WHFR. Call the studio for further ticket information at 313-845-9676. Tickets will be sold at the door until the house is full, so get your tickets early. That's Saturday, April 12th at the Ramada Inn in Taylor on Eureka, just east of I-75, for mature audiences 18 and older.
Hello, friends of WHFR.FM. As you know, WHFR Radio is a non-commercial, educational volunteer, student and alumni staff broadcast radio station at Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan. I'd like to invite you to be a part of the 2008 WHFR Radiothon. This year's Radiothon takes place Sunday, April 6th through Saturday, April 12th. Pledging your support is easy. Simply call us at 313-845-9676 to make your tax-deductible donation via credit card. For the past 22 years, WHFR Radio has been committed to the mission that we've always strived to follow, providing programming that's little else or not at all heard on the Detroit radio dial. Please pledge and help keep us making waves right here at WHFR.FM.
And that's coming up in just 2 weeks. Actually, 2 weeks from today, we always do a little bit of a early jump start on our once-a-year annual pledge drive to raise money for this station. We cannot stay on the air without your donations. And only once a year do we ask for them, but we just want you to know that there's a lot of special activities happening during that week, and just because we're trying to get your attention. There's always something special going on here at WHFR.
So get ready.
Yeah, on this show in 2 weeks from today, we're having Mayor O'Reilly. That's right. Dearborn Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr. will be right here for this hour of the new WHFR Journal, and we'll find out directly from him how the city is doing in one or probably quite a few different areas. I've got a lot of questions to ask, and he's always very generous with his time, and it's kind of a special tradition. We've had Mayor Guido in all the previous years until he passed away, and we had Mayor O'Reilly last year. So next to the State of the City address, appearing on WHFR during our pledge drive seems to be quite a great tradition. So stay tuned for all those things. Before the Radiothon mention, is that on Saturday, the 12th of April, our Comedy Tonight, it's an improv comedy group that is doing a benefit for us. And so a great Saturday night of live improv comedy by one of the best local comedy troupes in the Detroit area. We did this last year. A lot of fun was had by all. It's going to be at a Ramada Inn in Taylor. And WHFR, just another way to get your attention, let you know that we really need your support for another year. Only once a year do we ask. And that'll be coming up just 2 weeks. And a lot of special prizes and incentives that are going to be given out along the way. Whatever you pledge to us may not even cost you hardly anything in final value because of
the prizes worth the what incentives. You gave as a donation.
Yeah. Well, even on Joanne Korchinska's Highway 61 show, we have so many extra CDs that are given away that if you had to buy them, it would cost you more than giving a pledge to WHFR. But where have we gotten the CDs from? The artists and their music companies have given them to us for free. So it doesn't cost us anything, but you actually get great value, too, as well as a radio station that we can't hear this stuff anywhere else. I'm joined, of course, today by Ned Apigian, who is one of our WHFR staff volunteers and, in fact, has one of the WHFR forum programs once a month every Saturday from 10 to 11. And what we're going to be doing tomorrow is repeating his show, which is normally the fourth Saturday of every month, but some months there's a fifth Saturday.
Right.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and the topic is the Russian Revolution.
Wow, that was from back 1917, right?
1917, and from the turn of the century up to almost to the end of the Soviet Union. And our guest is Professor Ronald Suny from the University of Michigan.
University of Michigan, Ann Arbor.
In Ann Arbor, right.
Yes. And who has written several books. Oh, my gosh, the resume that you read at the start of the show, it was there when you were taping it.
Yeah, we only had to use part of it, else we didn't have nothing else to talk about.
Very distinguished, educated person. Some people don't understand what the Russian Revolution was really all about, too. They think of it as you know, the dirty communists or whatever. It was a very exciting time when people thought they were getting a lot of freedom.
The world was changing, that's for sure.
Yeah, that they were deposing a tyrant, a monarch.
An autocrat,
yeah, and a French-speaking one on top of it in the middle of Russia.
English. And they were all related to Queen Victoria. They all spoke written their letters in English.
My golly. In any event, another exciting show of Then and Now.
Right.
We're going to be repeating last Saturday's show from 10 to 11 a.m. tomorrow morning here at WHFR. That show also is podcast from our website, WHFR.fm, by date. So just remember, Then and Now typically is the fourth Saturday of each month for this sort of intellectual history, the background that you probably wouldn't get unless you read an awful lot of books about how and why we are where we are today. A lot of these are very significant things. Ned did a whole series on the development of the Muslim religion, too, in history, as well as
our first show was with our own professor. What was his name? So I don't mispronounce it. And I just hear from
Nabil Abraham.
Nabil Abraham. We were talking about the beginnings of Abraham's story.
Mm-hmm.
The development of the Arabic or Palestinian or the Semitic peoples.
Yeah.
Anyway, the important issue is always our current events have something to do with what happened in the past.
Always, yeah. Those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. And let me tell you, sometimes that's pretty ugly. I mean, it also makes you feel silly, too.
You know what? It's really interesting that the average person doesn't know. In 1918, the Americans sent an army to Russia to intervene in the Russian Civil War. And if you wonder why they should be suspicious of you, It's because of those interventions. Americans died in the strangest places in Siberia defending what against what, who knows.
A lot of people don't know that during World War II, we sent our army into China, mainland China, and we're fighting there too for somewhat suspicious reasons. And in fact,
well, at least the Japanese were there.
Yeah, yeah. No, we were actually fighting communist Chinese, Mao Zedong, at the time. But we told the American public, our government, our government told the American public we were there fighting the Japanese, and we were not. Oh, my gosh. Another example of sometimes our government lies to us, and we need to catch them in that. And
but now we have to get back to our local bank.
I wanted to mention briefly the update on a story that I've covered in the last year about the Dearborn Federal Credit Union. You know, most of their members are people who work at Ford Motor Company. Okay, although, like every credit union today, they have expanded their membership base to include other people, affiliated groups, and so on in the area.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes. In any event, they thought they could make more money if they changed their whole banking institution.
Their charter, I guess.
Their charter, right, from a credit union to a commercial bank. That they could do, make more profit. They could invest in different things and provide a little bit wider range of services. They felt that they could compete better too. Because unfortunately, and this is so unfortunate, the general public still thinks there's something kind of second rate about credit unions compared to big time savings banks, and that is, or so-called commercial banks, and that's just not true at all. Let me tell you, folks, if you do any research, I learned this in my general business class in ninth grade about the differences between commercial banks and credit unions. And
yeah, if you're a member of a credit union, you want to get a car loan, you'll usually get a better deal at the credit union.
Right, and the interest rates are generally better across Michigan in terms of, although even credit unions don't give you too much interest on a savings account, but they give generally more than the commercial banks do. So for many things, you should try to consider a credit union. I'm not doing an ad for them. The former Dearborn Schools Credit Union now calls themselves Member Focus Community Credit Union because they've affiliated with so many groups that almost anybody can qualify to join. And they've consistently had the highest interest rates paid and the lowest service fees of any credit union in the area. And I think they're great. I've been with them for 40 years and all kinds of different services, even equity loan on my house at one point. And I can say good things about them because they are a non-profit. Not all credit unions are non-profit.
The other savings. You get a rebate, kind of like in a dividend.
Yeah.
Well, you're the owner of the institution. You get some of the profit back.
Because many members of the Dearborn Federal Credit Union, when this was first announced, said, wait a minute, what are you doing? You didn't tell us before. You're going to go ahead and do this? There was no vote. You didn't ask the membership. The membership, people buy shares and actually see themselves as voting members of credit unions. And it was almost without consultation that the board of the DFCU went this way. So there's so much upset they decided to back off trying to move towards a commercial bank. However, there were still complaints on both sides, and so it went to
court.
Yes, the Wayne County Circuit Court judge has now ruled that members of the DFCU Financial, Michigan's largest credit union, in fact, are entitled to call a special meeting for the purpose of voting on the removal of the credit union's board of directors. Democracy in action, sort of like this petition drive.
Is that what it's come down to?
But they do have a right to do that.
I'm a member of the Detroit Teachers Credit Union, which is now called Michigan First.
Oh.
And they're always having their annual meeting here at the Hyatt Regency in Dearborn.
Well, that's pretty classy.
Yeah, so to give you an idea, and they send you out a slate of candidates who to vote for. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's happening here. They're saying, you guys that brought this issue upon us, well, we're going to make sure that
there has to be a vote now, but I always like to see when our court system reinforces the idea of democracy and the right to petition and the right to be heard. We don't know how that's going to turn out, but that's the update on that, is that the board, who said you don't have a right to ask for a recall election, we're denying your request to have a recall election. So they went to court, and the court says they have a right to ask for it. So it is going to be scheduled sometime in the near future. I haven't read the rest of the article. Shame on me.
Needless to say, that's going to be interesting.
Right. Well, we'll see how that comes out and whether or not it changes the direction.
Did they preserve the fact that they can't change, or it's just preserving the fact that they're just voting on removing?
They're voting on removing the current board members, and
which
then, of course, there have to be an election. Well, there have to be an election for new board members if those board members are removed.
And then that's what kills the election.
Well, maybe. And then
the change.
Well, the new people coming in might have a new direction, or maybe they will just be more democratic in the decisions they choose to make. We don't know about that. There are several steps there. So, okay. You felt that you wanted, did you want to share your thoughts about Senator Levin's opinion about paying for reconstruction in Iraq?
Well, we were talking about the whole thing came about from the cost of the war, and the cost of recalls and having elections. And if you're those of you who have seen the senator's view, it's not often that he writes something in the newspaper, in the Press and Guide, which was the March 26th issue of the recent newspaper.
Right.
He is rehashing the point that we were sold a bill of goods about who was going to pay for what and how much it was going to cost. And here's what he says: paying for reconstruction in Iraq, when obviously here in America all you got to do is drive down the roads in the state of Michigan, the car capital of the world, and heaven help you, you better learn how to miss all the potholes. He says, during the 5 years of the war in Iraq, the United States government has spent approximately $500 billion. I believe it's more than that. It's like $600 million.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a trillion a few years. Of course, that includes the war effort. But
right.
He's saying that part of that funding, it's this reconstruction, billions of dollars for it.
Right. Of infrastructure, training, Iraqi security forces, and rebuilding Iraq's economy. But while American taxpayers have been funding Iraq's recovery, reports indicate the Iraqi government has accrued billions of dollars of assets that sit in banks, bank accounts around the world. Now, this is the key in this article.
Yeah.
At the outset of the war, now I didn't realize that, in 2003, Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz asked whom he expected would pay for the rebuilding of Iraq. He answered that there's a lot of money to pay for this. It doesn't have to be U.S. taxpayer money, and it starts with the assets of the Iraqi people. The oil revenues of that company could bring between $50 and $100 billion over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
We are dealing with a country that can really finance its own reconstruction and relatively soon. Well, so why are we spending all this money? This assessment was correct in part. The U.S. State Department estimates that Iraq's oil sales garnered $41 billion in 2007. With oil prices on the rise, it looks possible they will collect $60 billion in 2008. But despite billions of dollars in revenues, these funds have not been spent on Iraqi reconstruction as hoped. Recently, he was joined by colleagues in the Senate Armed Services Committee, Republican John Warner of Virginia, in a request for an inquiry into Iraqi oil revenues and the funding of reconstruction in Iraq. Our conversations with both Iraqis and Americans during the visit to Iraq, as well as official U.S. government and unofficial media reports, have convinced us that the Iraqi government is not doing nearly enough to provide essential services and improve the quality of life and for its citizens. Now, we could go on to read the whole article, but this is what's frightening when you think of, it's not tax.
Yeah,
we're
right.
Borrowing this money from China and Japan so that the next generation can pay the interest on the note. It's not like we're taxing somebody and they were paying for it and it's paid for. It's like putting it on a credit card.
Right. Well, this is part of the problem of setting up a government that you want to be independent. You want them to take control. You want them to, you know, be able to manage their own affairs so we can get the heck out of there, since we shouldn't have been in there in the first place, and cause terrible devastation and destruction in that city and in that city, in that country. And the estimate now, by the way, is that over 1 million Iraqis have died since 2003, and most of them innocent, by the way, most of them not part of any sort of combatants against us. And so we've caused terrible loss of life as well as property destruction.
And nobody's figured the cost of taking care of the wounded American soldiers forever.
Going between the lines here, you wonder, and Senator Levin doesn't try to presuppose this.
Doesn't pull any punches.
But I wonder, why would the Iraqi government take the oil profit money, and most of it they've put in, get this, non-Iraqi banks? In other words, they put it in banks outside of Iraq. Now, what do they want to do with this money? I mean, obviously it seems more secure if they put it in Iraqi bank. Somebody's going to rob the bank or blow it up or something. Not very secure. But what do they want to use it for in the future? When the Americans leave, let's say if they expect Americans to up and leave, and maybe we will at some point, maybe we should anyway, but you'd think they would want to have the oil wells working better. You'd think they want security to be better. You'd think they would want working electricity and water supplies for all their people when we leave. I think, and this is the bad news, I think they're saving up that money so that when we leave, they can buy additional arms, weapons, to defend themselves either against insurgents or Iran. And they might even decide to attack or something. Who knows what? But I think they want that money in reserve to figure out what they're going to do with it, what's appropriate to do with it after we leave, if we ever leave. And I think we have to. But they need to get responsible. There's no doubt about that. What does Levin conclude here? Just we should not send any more money to them?
I think at the bottom he says every taxpayer dollar should be spent wisely, as should every dollar of Iraqi oil revenue. We oppose an arrangement that spends American funds on Iraqi reconstruction and allows the Iraqi government to avoid committing its own financial resources to build a future for the Iraqi people. Mm-hmm. I don't understand, since this is costing us a small fortune and this is the story Wolfowitz sold us, that why we don't take the money and use that for the cost of fighting the war. Why should we pay for it? It's them that is being liberated.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's, again, it's because we're trying to, you know, we gave them a chance to vote democratically for the first time in their history. They did elect some people. It's been hard for them to come to any agreements, even about the oil revenues, about who's going to get the profits. I think maybe that's another reason that they put it in these outside banks. They can't agree on how to spend it among themselves within their own country.
Well, the problem is worse than that. They say that the oil potential of Iraqi is a lot larger than we think it is, and the only way you can get to it and develop it is for foreign investment. And guess what? Nobody wants to make an investment there. They're afraid of losing their investment. So stability is going to help them in more ways than one. It's going to help that problem, and this is a problem that people are not really they're not appreciating unless they get their act together and decide that they're going to work together. We're headed in no worse. There is no military solution to this problem. This is not a military solution.
Well, right. It has to be a human solution.
It's
now
a stability issue, right, that the life can go on.
Need some good managers there. Let's feature back to Dearborn here. The headline story this week's Times Herald from Wednesday, March 26. It says shorter goodbyes. Now, if it's radio, so I've got to spell that. B-U-Y-S, shorter goodbyes.
Yeah, the Area housing house market sales is returning. Well, not as bad.
Locally, sales are up a little bit from 2007. Okay?
A little bit.
But they're better than in some other parts of Metro Detroit. The average time, it says here, for the market for a house in the Dearborn Heights area is 103 days. Well, that's that's 3.5 months, though. But so if you're going to need to put your house up for sale, folks, the average time is 3.5 months wait.
Tell that to the guy in my block that's trying to sell his house for 2 years.
I have seen some in my neighborhood that have signs up for several years. In one house on the corner of my street, And I live in a nice neighborhood, so the houses are not, you know, maybe as inexpensive or as available, therefore, to a majority of buyers. But two sons are trying to sell it. Their mother passed away 2 years ago, and they redid the yard and the lawn to make it look a little neater and cleaner there. But it's still up for sale. Now, you would think, you know, nobody's living there, nobody's using it, that they would want to sell it at a slightly reduced price.
Well, my guy,
and it's still not selling.
He has two different signs. It began price reduced. Now it says best make offer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you start putting signs like that up, you know somebody's going to come and say make offer. I'm here to steal and take, rip, burn, and plunder.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a better sign for that. If those of you who have gotten your tax assessments recently, like I have,
mm-hmm.
when you look at it, you're seeing the assessment and valuation dropping, which is a result of our present market share, so what's happening in the market. And you're seeing some people telling their taxes are being reduced because of those formulas. Like in my case, I always go and make sure that their assessments are within the cost of living or within the 5% that the proposal A was talking about. So they can increase up to 2.3% of the cost of living, inflation, and or whatever controls the 5%, which is limited. And when you see these assessments changing, that gives you some idea of how that's going to affect the finances of communities. Heaven help you if you need to sell your house and you need to buy another one. I think Mr. Dillon is proposing a tax cap when you buy the next house, that the tax is capped at the sale price.
Yes, my daughter was...
That's unbelievable,
and her
because
husband,
that could cost a small fortune to the
My daughter and husband live in Dearborn, but they want to buy another house in Dearborn. They just had their first child, and they need a little more space. But they know that the sort of taxation cap, when somebody else in Dearborn sells their house at this point, that the rates can go way up for the next person that buys that house.
They'll usually be double almost.
Yeah, they don't want to necessarily lose the cap from the house they're in, but it's going to be very expensive. So maybe she'll rent my house out or something. But
well, the interesting thing is, I don't know if that's a proposal. That's a proposal he's made. Dillon has made.
Right, it hasn't gone through yet.
Yeah. No.
And as I think, well, even you mentioned, or someone else who did the story with me here on the show, that's going to hurt the individual cities.
They're going
to lose that extra
exactly.
income. They count on so many houses selling so that the percentage of taxation can go up to help out their own budget.
They're crying wolf over something that doesn't exist, because what's happening every time there's a sale, the house that was paying $3,000 is now paying $6,000.
Mm-hmm. Right, because the value has gone up.
So they've really been making money, even though they're complaining about not going up. It's worked in their favor.
Yeah, we'll see if it happens. Just so you know, though, the most local realtors are very positive, not just because the sales have been holding somewhat steady, but interest rates for mortgages are pretty low now. Some are 6% or even a little bit lower, even for fixed loans, fixed mortgage loans, which seem a lot less risky to me than one of those adjustable rate things, which got a lot of people into a lot of trouble when the rates jumped up in the last couple of years. But here's what they have to say. This is from Dana Holben, who's Chief Executive Officer of the Dearborn Area Board of Realtors. We're encouraging people on the fence to really look at what we have. And I always make fun of those metaphors that sitting on a fence is not as good as sitting in a living room, right? Anyway.
And averages are deceiving.
Yeah, Holben mentions, she says, that includes Henry Ford Community College in this area. If you come in this area, you get a great community college at a very low tuition, because we have significant tuition discounts to Dearborn residents.
Yeah, especially
and Dearborn Heights residents, too, right?
If you're in the Dearborn school district.
Mm-hmm. And programs that enable high school students, too, to graduate with associate degrees, as well as the University of Michigan Dearborn. And this area has a small-town feel, she says, which is true. Airport and downtown proximity, concerts, and great facilities. Everything you need is right here. Everything you'd ever want. No, I'm exaggerating.
Well, if you look at the redevelopment of Michigan Avenue and some of the stories we've seen in the paper things are turning into piano bars and restaurants. We're fast becoming the new Royal Oak without the traffic on Michigan Avenue.
Well, I still need a good independent bookstore and indie movie theater for me. But nonetheless, we have a lot of things here. It's true. I should mention that they...
Well, we got an empty one on Michigan Avenue and Telegraph, right? We can make that into an art theater. Bring the one from the Maple, bring it down here. So.
Well, there was the Ford Theater, or Ford Tell, what it was called, which is still vacant.
Oh, although, that's right. That one is, too.
Right, but it's apparently...
That's more suitable.
The last people that leased it, when they left the building, they turned on the fire hoses inside the theater.
Why?
And, to trash the place, that it soaked all the furniture, and there's a massive fungus and mildew, and so, like, all the seating in that would have to be replaced. The building probably has to be torn down to the ground now and rebuilt because the fungus and mildew is so deadly inside there. I mean, so,
I never heard of that.
Yeah, someone looked into maybe trying to rent the property, make another theater, another indie theater, and so I don't know if that's still the case, but anybody trying to get involved with that, they're probably going to buy the whole place and then tear it down and build something back up. So who knows? But April 27th comes up in about a month now. Today is the 28th of March. There's going to be a big open house. That's capital B, capital O, capital H, being held in conjunction with real estate agents and community leaders in four other counties to mark the start of the home buying season. As Holbin says, it's the largest single open house event ever planned in the country. Not just the county, in the whole country. It's an opportunity to shift consumers' attention to the positive opportunities in today's housing market. And you know what? They don't say where that's going to be.
Well,
they don't say where it's going to be held. But we'll get back to you, folks. We'll let you know where the big open house is going to happen on April the 27th, in case you want to get into the home buying spirit or find out answers to other questions. There used to be a builder's home show at Cobo Hall. Yeah. I think it's out at Troy or something now. Might have already happened. Home and Flower Show? Novi?
Novi Center. Has
Novi Center, show yeah. Too. But often they had people, vendors, talking about mortgages and home construction. And
well, the problem is when a person's not quite sure, he's offered, his job is not secure. It don't make any difference what
exactly.
The interest rate
I know.
Is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, we have an interesting story about emergency lights in Dearborn Heights. We ought to tell the people about that. That's
well, why
really,
don't you do that?
Yeah,
we have 9 minutes. So.
The city of Dearborn is... has created a situation so that, you know, when the emergency vehicles want to go through,
mm-hmm.
Well, somebody over there by the name of Mr. Pappas, I believe, says the the emergency light system that has been tested in Dearborn Heights intersection since last year may get installed in more intersections this summer as well as in other communities. Well, you see, Dearborn Heights has led the way for the world. Now, the whole... Many communities are interested. The system is designed to alert drivers that fire trucks, ambulances, and or other emergency vehicles like police cars are about to enter the main intersection. Tom Pappas, president of E-Light LLC, invented the new emergency lights. They are called the Emergency Vehicle Alert System, or EVAS. We need an acronym, EVAS.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, the lights are being used at Beach Daily in Warren, Beach Daily in Haas, and Warren in Fenton Street. Dearborn Heights Police Chief Mike Gus said, word of the system is getting out, and more communities are showing an interest, both in-state and out. Mm. So we are trailblazers here in this part of the world, and thank God for that. There are other... other issues that we could tell you about, but we don't need to go into any more detail about that.
Now, I have a few announcements here, and I think there's a couple things happening at Henry Ford Community College, too, that you were mentioning to me earlier. Just as we sum up, we're going to have a night sky report recorded live from Kerry Zaitz, who is a columnist on a regular basis.
Zaitz.
That's right. In the Press and Guide each week, and we have her... audio version of her columns right here on this show, and that we'll be concluding the show today with that in about 3-4 minutes. And let's not forget Highway 61, the best in local blues, coming up today, starting at 2 o'clock until 6 o'clock this afternoon with Joanne Korchinska. But Monday, March 31st, 8 p.m. coming up next week, Kevin Dewey, who is our own head of our vocal music program here at Henry Ford Community College, the Vanguard Choral, is having a celebration, and it is the first annual one, but let's make a big deal of it, and it will be, certainly. Vanguard Voices, Kevin conducts them, is a program of the City of Dearborn Recreation Department and Choir in Residence at HFCC. And in addition to performing themselves at this event, this is 8 p.m. Monday at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michigan in Greenfield. Okay?
Right around the corner.
Yep. They're going to have Detroit Concert Choir there, too, under the direction of Nelson Gordon Nelson, Langsford Men's Chorus, Steve Segraves, director, and Invoice. Sounds like you owe the money or something, but Invoice. Stuart Scott, the director.
In-dash.
Mm-hmm.
V-O-I-C-E.
These are some of the best choirs from around the Detroit metropolitan area, all with one thing in common. They've never sung in Dearborn before, except for the Vanguard Voices. So this concert's an opportunity for Dearborn to hear groups that they may have never heard separately and combined, and for these excellent groups to hear each other, also a first. The finale to the concert will be 200-plus choristers, 100 of whom are men, joining forces to sing Pavel Tishenkov's, I hope I said that right, Gesundheit, exquisite Salvation is Created. Ticket price is only $5. If you love a great choral experience with a lot of great voices under the direction of great vocal teachers and directors, it's only $5, folks. 8 p.m. This is coming Monday, March 31st.
Where?
And it's at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center.
That's what they need to know.
Right. Also, Tuesday is April Fool's Day. Just warning you there.
Oh,
so
my God.
Be ready for those April Fool's jokes. But here's one that's kind of interesting. From the Rising Tide North America organization, there's over 100 actions that are planned to confront dirty energy from this group. So April Fool's Day actions to target fossil fuel industry. Okay, this is what they're doing. It's an internet. They're making April 1st an international day of protest focused on climate change and energy issues. Actions being planned so far include critical mass bike rides, green job rallies, protest, and civil disobedience at power plants, energy companies, urban sprawl developers, Bank of America mass account closures, car dealer adoptions, no coal photo petitions. So they're going to be very, very busy. And just to let you know, these protests are planned in over 100 locations throughout the U.S., Canada, United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand. We don't know of any specifically in Detroit, but they're not fooling. That's the message I want to give you. So they're using April Fool's Day, which I think might be a mistake, just symbolically, to let you know that maybe things should change in the direction of our energy use. And in fact, WHFR, soon to be announced, we have an exciting new energy independence plan that we're going to be mentioning.
Did you?
Be part of.
I sent you an email about how to reduce gas prices. Did you get that, Jan?
No.
You have to check your email.
Use less gas?
To reduce the price of gas. We ought to share it with our, this person who sent this email along indicated that if each of us pass it on to 10 people, we would hit 300 million people and his mathematical analysis.
Wow.
And what his point was, and it's don't buy gas on Wednesday or Thursday, he says, do not buy gasoline from the major well-known producers, but only buy gas from the off-brand people. This would reduce the income of the major gasoline producers.
Oh, I see. Okay, so the small independent oil companies, right?
Consequently, he says, then they would have to reduce prices to increase their sales, and then that would create somewhat of a gas war like it used to be in the old days. Anybody remember? It was 27 cents a gallon, like for decades, it seemed. And then before that, they would have a gas war, and it would come down to 19 cents, those good old days.
That's before my time.
You don't remember that?
I don't want to admit it. That's my point.
When I was in Saudi Arabia, which was about 20 years ago, it was like 25 cents a gallon.
Yeah, well and they had all the oil.
This is the best
with,
way
yeah.
to cut the okay. show off, the price of gasoline.
Yeah, so we need to go from these mundane earth matters to some celestial matters, and we're now going to feature the Night Sky Report and end our new WHFR Journal for today, Friday the 28th. Thank you, Ned Apigian, for being my co-host.
And thank you.
Always sharing all of your insights and all of your involvements with local activities. Just as another mention here, and I don't know if she's involved with it directly, but Henry Ford Community College is offering free planetarium shows. Yes, we have a planetarium right on campus. Tuesdays, every Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. through June 17th. It's a 48-seat planetarium, so get there. Doors open at 7:15, and the show lasts about an hour or so. And this is called Nothing Gold Can Stay, a Spring Star Talk. And that is a lot of fun. And guess what the price is? Free.
I got to do that.
Yeah, it's a great thing, and it may or may not be Carrie that is doing the presentation. Sometimes they have Susan McGraw, our general manager, recording the narration, and they play the recording during it. Whatever, it's the HFCC, Henry Ford Community College, in our science building in the planetarium, 7:30 every Tuesday night through June 17th. Nothing Gold Can Stay, a Spring Star Talk. Well, that's all for now, and here is the Night Sky Report with Carrie Zaitz, Jay Koronick, and Ned Apigian. Be careful out there, and have a good weekend.
Yes.
Hello, this is Carrie Zaitz with your Night Sky Report. Michigan winters can drag on and on, but soon there will be a real dragon in the sky. The moon-eating dragon we know as a lunar eclipse. The word eclipse is Greek, meaning abandoning or forsaking. On February 20th, around 9 p.m., you will see our lovely full moon abandon us as it is eaten by the shadow of the earth. Lunar eclipses may seem rare, but they actually happen twice a year. We cannot see them if they happen during the day. The moon is always full during a lunar eclipse, and full moons are always opposite the sun.